Hello, people. Sorry for the lethargic intro. I'm exhausted from attending my grandparents' 65th wedding anniversary over the weekend, staying at my brother's house, doing lots of fun things while we were there. 65 years, man, that's way more than a lot of people live. That's a very impressive, and a big shout out to my grandmother and grandfather because they're awesome people. They definitely are the benchmark. Outside of that, I'm going to keep this short. One of the things I love about podcasting is the making new friends, meeting new people. We met a new person this week and made a new friend in Kitten Calcaterra. Sorry. I even spell it wrong in my refrigerator. But Ken's conversations with Calcaterra, or conversations with Ken, I forget what he calls it, but you're going to find out in the episode. Just go to kencalcaterra.com, and that's two R's. He's a cool dude, filmmaker, producer, learning musician, photographer, just a lot of cool things going on with Ken. He talks to a lot of cool people, including us, so enjoy that. And also, by the way, go see all my sponsors. Go see the Beer Sauce Shop, because you know, I've said this, they've had at least 1,300 different beers since they opened up less than a year ago. They have over 25 to 40 different whiskeys and bourbons, gins, vodkas, all kinds of good stuff. They've got hundreds of thousands of rubs and sauces, and they're just great people, and they're going to work on opening their second location, so support that. Also, support my boy Alex at Bomber Jacket. Head to www.mybomberjackets.com. Use a promo code, even if it's not ours. I don't give a crap. Also, support my good friend Aaron Conaway on his book, Buy It, Waking the Weaver, a Timberhaven novel. And if you meet me anywhere in the Springfield area, if you see me, whether it's the convention coming up in September, which I'm about to talk about, that's CaveCon 2018, weekend of September 28th, 29th, whatever that falls on, I will buy you a beer. The first five people that can tell me where I met Josh Roberts at, we've talked about it on the show, gets a beer. And if you have personal information and inside information about it, that's insider trading. You don't get a free beer. All right, all that said, this is a great episode with Ken. Me and the Silver Badger sat down with him. We got some cool stuff coming up next week. Going to have John Shannon probably back on, and going to have That Year in Comics 1996 probably pop up on Tuesday. So check it out. I'm done rambling. Here comes the bomb right now. Hey, we're back, and this week it's just Tom and myself.
What's up, party people?
Well, at least just Tom and myself with none of the other co-hosts. That said, we're replacing them with a guest this week. Calcaterra.
All right.
Now, I wrote down, for those that of my listeners that don't know what you are, I'm going to do this because we've got some friends that sponsors of our show, The Beer Sauce Shop, and a guy named Andrew, and he had his podcast changed names twice. He had a magazine. He had a lot of hats. Well, I want to go through yours. So you're listed as writer, or director, producer, photographer, podcast host. What am I missing something there?
Yeah, and that's one of the crazy things. You know, I guess it's maybe jack of all trades, master of nothing. Hopefully, I still have a little bit of time. I've put a lot of time into some different things, so I've been able to get to a high enough level. Now it's like where to focus. The podcasting is fairly new.
You're on episode 40? 38, 40?
49.
Okay.
And I just recorded with the Smash last night, so that was a lot
from
of fun.
From the famous Smash Band?
Yeah, Smash Band and KSHE.
Yeah. Gotta get her done.
I'll be done.
Or gotta go to work. That was our theme.
Well, fantastic. And I do want to get to your podcast, but I want to start out with just going through some of the stuff you sent to watch and some of the stuff that you list on your website. I'm just assuming that maybe it was directing. Was that the first passion that you really jumped into? Or
yeah, and it was, I guess always playing with photography, mm-hmm. but the first thing I realized, hey, I want to kind of make a job out of this, was directing.
Now, you also list that you love all things Italian, thus the way you pronounced your last name. I could never pronounce it like that. And you went to Lindenwood for digital media.
Yeah, so I decided at some point things were just kind of slow with freelance, mm-hmm. and I was always trying to keep busy and thought, all right, maybe the teaching thing's a way to go, so I just looked into getting a master's degree. I was like, yeah, you know, sometimes need those deadlines and everything, and in that program, I was able to write a really cool screenplay, And it's nice once again to have that deadline and have a reason to do it. I mean, it's we always had that reason we want to create, but if we don't have that extra, sometimes it's that external.
You need rules type sometimes. Situation. That's why we have editors. Totally. That's why we have executive producers. That's you know.
Yeah.
So. I never will ask this question because I'm not from St. Louis. So I'm not going to say what high school did you go to, but where are you originally from? Of this area?
I grew up in an area called Florissant.
You're not going to ask me. I'll ask, where did you go to high school?
NoCo. I went to Hazelwood Central.
Okay.
Yeah, I won't do that because I'm not from St. Louis.
And I'm just that's one of those things I really don't care.
Hawks, right?
Yeah.
Black and gold?
Well, my wife is the whom you met upstairs. She's North County. She's Rittner, though. So
okay, and that's where near where I live now.
Used to live in Overland. Kind of back behind the high school. We lived real close to the high school.
Okay, so I'm not far from there. Oh, yeah. Darn. All right, we would have been neighbors.
We lived right off of Brown.
You could have saved me a drive.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, we lived right off of Brown and I can't remember the street. And the one that runs right
like
by
Wismer. Wismer's one. Or no, that's a little further south.
Yeah,
Wyndham. I think Wyndham is one.
We were close to there.
And that's a street that people would go crazy with Halloween decorations and Christmas decorations.
One of my wife's very good friends, they lived right in the middle of that. So we would always walk up and go visit them and walk around with them. So, yeah, have you ever been to this street? It's the most famous Halloween street in St. Louis.
Once I go north of Page Avenue, it might as well be Chicago.
Chirac, what you call it?
Exactly.
I actually had a conversation with, I won't talk about what I do on the air, but we've just recently joined with another company, so we're this mega company at what we do now, and one of their people from Kansas City was in town today, and I was having lunch with them, and they were just kind of asking about St. Louis and things like that, and I said, you know, of course the first thing that they talked about was like, Ferguson, I go, come on, it was nothing. It was, I mean, it was something.
Like 4 years ago now?
They were like, where's
it's a hot topic, people, that stays in their minds.
So we were in Bridgeton because of the event I was at today, and so it was in Bridgeton, and I was like, well, this is kind of where North County kind of starts, going up that way, and she was like, so is that bad? I said, you know, it's got a bad rep. I mean, of course you know about Ferguson. She goes, oh, yeah, that was ugly. And I go, well, it was ugly in like three blocks. Mm-hmm. It really didn't get past that. And I lived close to it. So, but, yeah, it's. I've just sworn a long time ago not to ask these people these high school questions because I grew up in southeast Missouri, and no one wants to know where I went to high school.
Well, you talk about on the air all the time, Lamar.
No, that was Lamar.
Okay.
That was Lamar. Six straight state championships. There's, and I just found out that they're – and this one blew me away. Their archery team is going to the national championship.
Wow.
An archery team? This wasn't around when I was in school.
Well, and there's a lot of sports that just are new.
Yeah.
And that in high school, so some of the more, I guess, traditional, like you could say the Olympic type sports are more popular in high schools now. And then, of course, you're getting the in other sports, all this weird, these games and crazy sports that people are just making out. Let's combine baseball with professional wrestling.
I think
my school has like an ultimate frisbee team now.
That's
tweet
awesome
about it. Yeah.
Now you got to assume though, for like ultimate frisbee, even archery with the you know most of the time a kid's going to bring their own bow. So it's, for the school, it's a relative inexpensive sport. I mean, football is the most expensive sport for a school.
Do they let you bring your own bow to school?
No, but to the tournament or to the practices and stuff. Dude, it's country. Whereas country's a guy.
Yeah. In this day and age, I'd be kind of curious if they let you feel
it. Well, I think they would let you bring it for the purposes of practice.
Just no arrows.
Yeah.
You have your bow and your arrows
something
separately.
Like
the coach holds onto the arrows and you just carry the bow around through school the whole day.
St. Louis University High School used to have a rifle team. And like they had a rifle range in the high school.
Well, there you go. That
fun fact
seems like that would be
probably
a hard one.
Probably not going to work anymore.
No. So see, this is what happens, Ken, on our podcast. We just spiral out of control. But let's rein it back in a little
bit. Fun.
It's so cool. So growing up in Florissant, I have to assume that you said just the eye for photography, which you know the fact that you do photography and direct, I got to think that's the same muscle, right? I mean, that's the same eye. That's the artistic eye. I mean, one helps with the other. But at what point were you growing up? Because directing is such a, I'm always fascinated by when people in the Midwest, we've got a friend named Mike Schilling who has a zombie anthology series on YouTube. And he went to the Filmmaker Showcase a year or two ago.
2 years ago now.
And won for best special effects. But I always just, you know, everybody thinks of the coast. for entertainment, like New York, L.A.? What attracted you, or what was it where you thought, that's what I want to do when you were young?
It was just a creativity. So in high school, my creative energies went into acting and theater, which was great. Mm-hmm. And then at one point, I went into the Navy after high school, and I was reading a bunch of these books. And
what kind of pushed you to that path?
This is something my father did, and I just I just didn't have a direction. So I thought, all right, you know, let me try this.
Still a good place for some people.
Thank you for your service.
Oh yeah, you're welcome. You're welcome. And it was just spontaneous. It was just like one of these things. And I'm usually more calculated, but the recruiter was there, and I thought, hey, you know what? I'm kind of disenfranchised right now, and
if you're gonna roll the dice, just roll it with the military. So what books? You were reading books at the time. You said what was?
It was just books on like just the entertainment industry. And
okay. Like not a particular fiction book, but books about what you wanted to do.
Yeah, I mean, I was reading some fiction at that time. I'm trying to think what, I have to remember back to what I was reading then. But, you know, just looking at screenwriting books and then books on the industry and thinking like, and there was one question, like, why do you want to do this? And I could not answer that. And then I thought, but you know what? I like coming up with ideas and things like that, you know, that aspect, the directing aspect, it was just, I've always been a huge fan of movies, and just something that has always just been magical to me. And so I thought, all right, let me try to do this.
Were you able to get any directing chops in while you were in high school?
Not really. I mean, it was a little different time. The technology is not where it is now. It's so accessible now.
Sure.
And I could have done some things then, but I guess I just didn't know how to do it. It seems so out there. I mean, my friends and I, we would make the stupid little goofy movies, but there was really no editing. So like then it's like a tape to tape thing, and I just, you know, had no direction. So
I'm 40. Are we around the same age?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so you like me probably too. That was when the boom of independent filmmaking really started with Slacker, and then Kevin Smith, and then Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez and all those guys. And those guys were just, you know, they were a little older than us, mm-hmm. but they were just going out on no budget and making movies.
Oh, yeah, it's amazing. And it just takes, you know, as they say in wrestling, that intestinal fortitude. Yeah.
Or as JR would say, our testicular fortitude.
Yeah, there you go. Even better. But, yeah, so it's just trying to figure that out and how to do it. I made a little stop motion movies with, like, G.I. Joes and things like
That's
that.
Awesome.
That was cool, but... You know, I would have to say I was kind of lazy at that time, and I was, you know, too much into video games and reading. I mean, I still love to read, and, you know, getting sucked into a novel, it's always great. But sometimes when you're in that mindset, then it's harder to create things. Or sometimes I heard in one podcast with your writer friend, he was talking about, you know, just getting bored and things like that. And sometimes you need to get bored with creativity. And that's what, with all the mobile devices nowadays, it gets to the point where you could never be bored because you always have something going
on. When you said technology has changed so much, literally filmmakers are only hampered by the memory on their phone. You know what I mean? I mean, they can film as long as their phone has memory, transfer it over a computer, erase that, and start all over. You know, I mean, you can go out and shoot a film with a phone now.
Oh, definitely.
That's insane. Yeah. What were you about to say, Tom?
No, I was going to say, if you could recommend a book to anybody, like a new friend that you meet, which book are you passionate about that you've read multiple times?
And that's a great question as far as in the filmmaking aspect. Oh, man, it's been a while since I've read any of those books, but... Oh, man, I may have to come back to that one.
That's okay.
Like, sure. From the screenwriting, I mean, if somebody that wants to write or just, you know, just the narrative of movies, there's Adventures in the Screen Trade by William Goldman stands out. I mean, that's still one that I have on my shelf and that pops into my mind.
So what, and not that, I don't know, because I don't know what all, does Lindenwood have a good media program? Was it, I mean... Is that what drove you to that, or was it just you went to school and then, like, I'm going to jump into this?
At the time, I went to, my undergraduate was at Webster.
Okay.
And that was a great experience for me because I would, I guess I'm a bit of a late bloomer, so just, like, finding my identity and all that, I was still doing so. So I think a school like Webster allowed me to really grow. Looking back, I think, like, hey, I should have went to NYU or USC or one of those big schools. Mm-hmm. Like. Yeah. Really, that's what it, I mean, so much of it is your contacts.
Right.
And you go to school like that, and there's people that are really, I don't want to say dedicated, I mean, very much dedicated. I'm not saying that someone like myself or someone else that went to Webster, it's just like a whole different landscape.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head. It's not what you know, it's who you know. You probably learn as much at a Webster than you would at
UCLA.
But the alumni at UCLA, USC, NYU is people we all know.
And James Cameron goes and teaches classes on a whim at UCLA still to this day. So, that's another question I had wrote down to ask. As someone that is doing filmmaking and documentary and things of that nature, do you find what I mean? Like, is the and I don't want to go to get jumped too far ahead, but is the overall goal to make it happen here, or is there like a future that you see yourself like, hey, if I'm going to truly be a filmmaker or whatever, should I go to the coast? Either one.
Yeah, and I made a move to the West Coast briefly, and at the time I was getting off some medication. And just looking at just this long winter that we've had, you know, where this weather.
No,
just looking at like seasonal, what is it, the sad, and just dealing with like lack of sunlight and things like that. That just always just messed me up. I didn't know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
So at one point, getting out of college, and I started a documentary on this, but just kind of burnt out a little bit. I need to get back to that. But just looking at that and having just this weird energy during the wintertime. I at one point was put on medication. I was getting off the medication when I went out to L.A., so it was not a good combination.
Oh, it wasn't the best frame of mind to make that trip.
It was horrible. But, you know, looking at that, I don't know, maybe at some point. But, I mean, I think you want to maybe focus on some more writing, some screenwriting. Yeah. And that's just something you can do without a lot of resources and get it out there. There's a lot of festivals and everything. I think overall to it takes in this industry, I would say it takes a good 10 years to get there. And then if you move to a different market, I think it takes about a year to build up some of those resources and to get some collateral and all that with just people.
So of course, I'm sure like we all have this in common. We all listen to a lot of podcasts, but last week there was two podcasts in particular that they brought this up, and these two podcasts were unrelated. But hey, man, Rodney Dangerfield didn't break until he was 47 years old. So he was a failed comic twice with two different names before he went with that character.
And wasn't he like he? And I just read something about him recently, and I think he was selling shingles or something like that.
Something crazy.
Yeah, or, salesman to make men's meat.
Yeah, yeah. So you look at that and 47. So I think and what's crazy in this business as well, and I've had good success doing commercial and corporate work and all that, and it wasn't always directing. But it was, you know, as a craftsman, so maybe location scouting or audio, but I did enough different things to make a living.
Mm-hmm. And make yourself more valuable across the board. You want to go out and be a director, well, you've got to direct, but if you're good at audio, if you're good at producing, you're good at everything, you have more hats and make yourself more, you can make more opportunities by learning all that other stuff.
Yeah, and as far as like from the, I think more so for the producing aspect, when you're putting all those pieces together, and a lot of times, you know, when you're independent, you don't have the money for a producer, so you're the producer as well. So knowing that, knowing the ins and outs, I know about audio, so when I'm putting a schedule together, I know how long it's going to take to set it up, or the things that you have to look for in a location, with locations, I know what to look for in that, there's so many different aspects, and so just looking at it, if you can piece it all together, and in a smaller market, a lot of times you have to, at times just the fear of not paying the bills like that.
Sure. That's a motivating factor.
Yeah, I would jump into something else or somebody would ask me, can you do this? And it would be like, oh, yeah, I mean, I've done it on my own things. And then I'd figure out the ins and outs of what the expectations were on a professional level and just made it happen. I guess I'm a little bit of a chameleon, but sometimes it's pretty scary as well.
I'm a firm believer that, one of the reasons we started this podcast is – because I wanted to do something creative. I was an art major. I was, creative writing minor, and I always wanted to write comic books and draw comic books.
Nice.
And that obviously did not happen. With my art degree, I got into the building material thing. But I do think that, everyone should strive to find something they love to do. And then it's not about the money, but people, I think sometimes people that are famous, sometimes they discount how much of a motivating factor paying the bills can be. I mean, you can get some good constructive and creativity out of just, God bless, I've got to pay rent next week. I've got to do something. It can make, it can work out for you.
It's also fulfilling, too, on a spiritual level, really. I mean, it kind of drives the engine and keeps us sane, our creative left-brained people.
You've got to eat. No matter what happens in life, you've got to eat. So
you had mentioned film festivals. Have you entered True False in Columbia or any local ones here in St. Louis?
I have not, and I should have looked into more festivals for this piece I put together called Pedaling to Stop Pushing. So I won a Mid-America Emmy for that. And
that was cool. I watched. I started that for you. That was one of the ones you sent over. I think I saw it even before you sent anything on your completed projects tab.
Yeah,
and that was one of them that was on there. That was cool.
You can find that all at KenCalcaterra.com, right?
Yeah, and that's a hub for it. And
we'll link to it.
Great, thank you.
Yeah.
And YouTube and things like that. Fortunately, with my name, my Instagram's my name, so there's great Twitter. So I feel very fortunate to just be able to use that and build my brand. And I guess in the past I was trying to... maybe this episode's maybe a little more serious than some others.
We'll
make
silly
dick jokes later.
Fantastic. But I think and I think it's helpful. These are things that there weren't podcasts when I started out, and I guess in one of my podcasts, Matt Hodel, who's just an amazing tattoo artist, entrepreneur, he had mentioned like the people at times that come to your schools and whatnot. I mean, it's the people that have made it, so to say. Yeah. Are the people that are there, or when we look at big directors, you know, we see them there and don't necessarily realize, I mean, we can read books, but the steps.
The blood and sweat that went into getting to where they are at.
Yeah, and it's nice to know, and he had mentioned something about, like, the guys that are making a living doing it and this, that, and the other, which is not as, I guess you'd say, celebrated, because we all... want to get to the pinnacle. We want to be a Martin Scorsese or somebody. Or like when I was going up, people were like, "Oh, you're gonna be the next Spielberg." And it's just like, well, wait a second. I didn't realize
small this. Goal.
Yeah, the steps that one would have to take to get there. So as far as the dream, you dream to be at that level. But sometimes, you know, I don't think I really focused on the journey as much. And now I'm realizing that a little later in life. But fortunately, I have a little bit of gas.
Well, I think in any creative industry, whether it be directing, acting, sports broadcasting, where there's a lot of people who want to do it because it seems like it's fun. But then when you get to those first steps on that pyramid, you realize, man, it's hard to make a living. And then once you kind of slowly start going up while people drop out and your experience gets better and better, that's when you kind of carve off a niche. We can't all be Scorsese's or Spielberg's, but we can make a decent living on it.
It's
not
funny.
That we are. We're you know, poor
we get
schlubs.
Free beer.
That's pretty
that's better than I ever thought we'd get.
Yeah, so it's funny though, you know, you talked about a while ago the how technology has changed, but in terms of not necessarily directing or things of that nature, but in terms of fame in general. That's kind of changed too, because like you said, you know, you used to see a Spielberg or you know, even let's just dial it back a little bit, someone that I've met and love and Kevin Smith. I mean, I wouldn't consider him the top of the food chain, but I tell you, there's a guy that's made a career and gotten famous for doing something he loves. But even that, there was a lot of sacrifice that went into it. Unfortunately,
selling his comic books. I mean, wow.
Yeah, having heart attacks.
But
no doubt.
And Southwest.
Unfortunately, though, in the world we live in now, you can be famous without having any effort whatsoever. Yeah. I mean, look at Logan Paul. I mean, it's.
Do your kids watch Logan Paul?
They do. They do. And I'm amazed he's still going.
Yeah.
I mean, he's still going. Not only do my kids watch it, but. Much to my chagrin, my oldest daughter has, whatever his shirts, Logan Army or whatever. She's got his shirts. It's awful. No,
but on the positive side, besides him.
You failed as a father.
I know.
Normal people can make it, though, too. I just found out a neighbor in my little crazy subdivision has 70,000 followers on Instagram for baking. That's incredible.
Do you know the name of the Instagram site?
Oh, God.
Neighbor fail.
Yeah.
Oh, that's all right.
My wife just told me last night. It's something like the Cookie Rookie. That's what it is.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I met somebody at a media, at a digital marketing conference recently who has a cupcake site, and she has like 300,000.
Isn't that crazy?
So you never know.
Those are the positive things. I think Logan Paul is definitely a negative.
Yeah. You referenced my friend Aaron, who was on the podcast a couple weeks ago. I mean, he self-published his book, and again, that's like we made reference on the show that – Yes, it is hard. It is painfully hard to get a book published. But now we're to the point in life to where we can get that calling card out there, and that calling card is a book that you self-published.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
You don't have, I mean, you've got something tangible, sales numbers to back up if someone wants to roll a dice. In fact, another one of my friends, Daniel Moeller, who's Aaron's best friend, he went that route, self-published his first two things. Now he's a published author, and we make fun. I say this in jest. I truly do am happy for the guy. But his book debuted under the Kabbalah and mysticism category, number one in the world. So I said, I think that means like 10 people bought the book.
Wiggy the Weaver did?
No. My other friend, Daniel Moeller.
What did you say it was?
Kabbalah and mysticism.
What is Kabbalah?
Kabbalah.
What is Kabbalah?
Kabbalah is like yoga, but it's like energy work, really a lot of breath work, heavy.
It's like a spiritual version.
Oh no, that's Kundalini. Yeah. I'm thinking right. No, Kabbalah is like the
spiritual Jewish
The Jewish. Yeah, that's right.
And mysticism. So
I know too many different things.
Sounds
and
like
it's
a
all
sounds
starting
like a race in an RPG.
He is definitely a wrestler.
That's Kamala.
That's the Ugandan giant right there. Yeah, but he's
missing a couple legs.
Yeah, he's definitely a hippie. Like in the truest sense, and into mysticism, and you know everybody's got their own thing. So to each their own. And for him, he's now an author with a book deal.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, which so you can use the tools that are at your disposal in a good way. Unfortunately, there are people making millions in the worst way possible with it. So.
But, yeah, and I hope it's not a situation that the movie Idiocracy
being
a prophecy, you know, but it's like looking like that, where it was like everybody getting kicked in the balls.
Talk about very average movie that now is referenced all the time because it's coming.
Easy on that average talk. I love that from day one. Mike Judge movies, Extract, Idiocracy, Office Space.
Have you watched Silicon Valley on HBO?
I love Silicon Valley.
It's brilliant.
Yeah.
Like the greatest dick joke ever in the first season.
The mathematical equation.
Yeah, the finale of the first season.
They break. Beautiful. Did you know about that? They break down a mathematical. They make a. They're stuck. Their product doesn't work, and they're about to unveil it to the world.
Spoiler alert.
So you know how you're like he was talking like when you're stuck against the wall and you don't know what you do, you know, their way of breaking through was somebody goes, we should might as well just go out there and jerk off every guy. And the guy goes, well, we couldn't possibly have enough time to do that. So these geniuses come up with a mathematical formula on how to line people up at the same height and go two at one time and how long it would take them to jerk off every person in the audience. And it's great. What's great about it is they get real mathematicians and physicists and computer guys to do all their jokes and stuff like that when they do it.
Doesn't Big Bang Theory do the same thing?
Well, they get people. They don't go as to me, the difference between Silicon Valley and Big Bang Theory is yes, people hate on it. It does have some geek stuff and some true stuff, but Silicon Valley is a real depiction of geek life. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, so all the stuff.
Oh, it's awkward at times.
Yeah.
I mean, they play it so well.
Yeah. Whoa, you're saying in real life a guy like Leonard couldn't get a girl like Penny?
Well, he did in real life. Johnny Galecki had her for a while in real life, so.
He fucked that up, huh?
Yeah, he did. She's got a new man two or three times over. Speaking of Johnny Galecki, he's debuting tonight on Roseanne.
I have not checked that out yet.
I have not either, but he had a nice flannel.
Definitely the 90s David resurfaced, the late, early 90s. It's average. I mean, it's okay. It seems to be, and I guess if it's the kind of thing you're into, it seems to have settled back in its lane pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I think it doesn't hold up as well as we all thought it was, but then again, I'm pretty critical. I mean, this show was supposed to be one of the greats, and, you know, sometimes those things, when you look back, aren't as good as you think they were.
Sure.
Yeah, it's amazing. Sometimes a lot of things like that, music, all kinds of pop culture.
Yeah.
You look at when you're, the things when, I guess you know, you've experienced less in life.
Yeah.
And you know, like wide-eyed and bushy-tailed and looking at things, the world in a different way. Those things are amazing. It's like looking back at like some 80s movies.
Oh.
I mean, what holds up for you and what has been a big fail?
Ah, man.
Great question.
I tell you what, one of the ones I think in my household, and I don't know if we've talked about it on the air, but one of the ones that's been the most polarizing, does it hold up or not, is Goonies. Goonies to me holds up very well.
I love the Goonies. Yeah,
we were just talking.
Watched it recently with my nephew.
Great. My daughters loved it too. We were just recently talking on our last episode. Does Princess Bride hold up?
Yes,
I think it does.
Oh yeah, definitely.
I think if you kept no matter what about how outdated the special effects are, the Back to the Future trilogy holds up.
Oh yeah, yeah. Storytelling wise, yeah. It's just amazing.
Karate of all things, the original Karate Kid. You talk about it. That movie is perfectly made.
I have not watched it in quite a while, so I need to revisit it, especially with the new one Cobra coming out. Kai yeah. coming out.
Oh, yeah. It's so good.
But that movie,
Daniel
in fact,
Russell sucks. Like, he's so annoying in it now.
Spoiler alert!
No, that's on the trailer. That's on the trailer.
No, I'm talking about the original movie.
I've watched it within the last two years,
and I didn't remember him just being so annoying.
He was annoying. And did you read this? There's some paper or something that basically say he's. You know, he was a total shit disturber. He was kind of the bully.
That's the Barney Stinson theory.
Yeah.
So Barney Stinson on How I Met Your Mother,
yeah.
from the very first season, he said that, what's Johnny's real name?
Billy Zabka.
Yeah. Billy Zabka. He says Billy Zabka, he's, from his perspective, he truly believes Billy Zabka is the hero of the story.
Johnny Lawrence.
And this new show
looks like it's going to be...
And that's kind of what... I mean, I've seen enough. I didn't watch the trailers, but I saw enough. There's enough out there where I'm absorbing it. They flipped it. It seems like that is a story of that theory. You know, the theory that...
Mm-hmm. Have you rolled the dice on YouTube Red yet?
Not yet, no.
That's what it's coming out on, and I believe it debuts in 2 weeks. But I will say...
And that's smart, and that's what all these content companies... It's just like, okay, we want to have the signature thing in Karate Kid. I mean, we're excited about it. Like, we want to see what happens. And I may subscribe to YouTube Red for a month or two to see it. So, I mean, it's taking those franchises and things that, you know, people that have a little bit of money.
Yeah, and you know what? For a new content provider out there, that YouTube Red, it's been out for a little bit. Look at Netflix. Everybody, Stranger Things, of course, they reference that, but that wasn't the first one. I mean, it just takes a hit. You get one hit, and then you've got yourself a network now, and the way things roll.
I mean, they're smart. I mean, they took a lot of content that was out there, and licensed content, then they paid for content, and it's really smart. And as I look back, my regrets in life, like, if I'd have done this and that, I'd been right at that good age to direct these things. Like, you lazy bastard. Not that I'm truly lazy, but it's just like finding the right direction.
Well, it takes a while to find your passion
crazy,
in life.
Man.
And it sounds like you're on the right path.
Yeah, you know, and it's looking at things differently. One question I ask on my podcast a lot is, like, what's your definition for success? And, you know, I would always think, it's being like this well-known director, this and that. And then now I look at it like, do I really want that? And without the resources, I've always tried to do these things on my own. I was like, if nobody else is going to do it. I'll figure it out. And I realized with movies, that's very difficult to do. Like, to actually produce something, like a feature film. Yeah, that's... You know, that's a coup de grace. You want to have a feature.
That would be awesome. Yeah, everybody wants to see their movie in the billboard, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I went to school in Joplin at Missouri Southern, and we had to take a college orientation as a freshman class. It was a half elective or one credit something. It was literally one 30-minute class a week. This is not a lie. So my blonde cheerleading teacher was an upperclassman, always teaches a class. Her name was Buffy.
And you took her to Slayer Town?
No. But I remember, like, the final class, and you could tell that this was probably, like, one of the things that I... So for me, when it comes to pop culture or movies or music, I both like and don't like seeing how it's something come together. I think it's very cool, like, especially in, like, comedy.
Mm-hmm.
You're a stand-up comic, you see how they built the joke. That's cool to see.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's also disappointing. For instance, our very last class of that first semester of college for me, she gets us all in there and she goes, "Guys, you've almost made it through your first semester. I think it's time we really get to know each other." So she gathered us all up. She took us out to near the biology pond, and we stood in a circle, and she goes, "I just want you to think and close your eyes. I'm going to ask you a question, and then one by one, you're going to come up and tell me the answer. what is your definition of success? And I just started dying laughing. I was like, you shitting me? I mean, come on. How many of these classes do they tell you to end that way? Mm-hmm. And of course, you know, being the, you know, 1996 stupid freshman in the world, a lot of them got up there and were trying to be funny, like, you know, some the douchebag gets up there and say, man, I'll consider successful if I get 10 chicks, and everybody's laughing. Everybody's not.
At once?
You know, no. Yeah.
Oh, well, I send the bar high.
Somebody's, you know, and, you know, of course, all she was waiting for, and that was me, and I kept waiting. I was like, God, please don't call on me. Please don't call on me. Because I even though I did not believe it, I wanted to say, I want to be rich to see, because as the first person said, I'd like to make a lot of money, and she stopped him. And she goes, well, why is that success? And I'm like, oh, God, you have been, somebody has gave you a script to read for this. But it's a good question. I mean, looking back now at 40, that question makes more sense than it did when I was 18. At 18, who gives a shit what success is? I'm just trying to get with the chick in the class. You know what I mean? Right. I mean, that would be my definition of success in the short term. But, so one of the things, and I'm guessing, you know, you talk on there about telling a story and being a leader and working with all the parts to tell a story. It's funny, a while ago, that you brought up that you're learning to play an instrument, because one of the things on your About Me part of your page I like is where you don't just say, I want to make a good movie or I'm going to make a good something. You say, I want to use the right pictures, the right images, the right music. So I was going to ask you if you were a musician at all, and you told us right before you're trying to learn to play bass.
And first of all, I love the research. It's fantastic. you know, I have, you know, this love for music, because music is one of those elements. And movies, and I think with movies, with using the right music, that's when it really, when you have the right music with the right visual.
There's a reason John Williams has all those Oscars.
Oh, yeah, you know? Yeah. Or, you know, just like look at James Horner in Glory.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't keep up on that thing. Like
good movie, good movie.
And anymore, who a lot of the composers are, but back in the day, that was like a good background for writing or creating.
Well,
or
it was
whatever.
The big four, right? It was Williams, Horner, Elfman, and
another big one was Alan Silvestri, who did Back to the Future. Oh, okay. Yeah. Forrest Gump. A lot of you know, Robert Zemeckis movies.
He was, I should say, he must have just been a Zemeckis guy, huh? I mean,
yeah, but I'm trying to think what else he did.
Just like Williams was a Spielberg guy for the longest time.
Yeah, I mean, of course, everybody has their collaborators. Yeah.
Did he do Apollo 13? Maybe. That might have been Williams, since it's a
this was a Ron Howard flick. No, that was James Horner. Horner.
You know who does a good job? He makes some decent movies. I mean, I think he's underrated sometimes, and then other times I think not. But who does a good job using music in his movies? Now, of course, these are some musicals for the most part. But Baz Luhrmann's a guy that's always done well with using music and telling his story. I mean, Moulin Rouge.
And the music in that story is just so. That's the heart of the story.
Oh, and I know another one. How about do you remember the first time you saw A Knight's Tale? With Heath Ledger.
You know, and that was interesting how they added
blown
just
away
like pop culture and like some metal, some like
We
Queen.
Will Rock
was,
You
yeah,
was the
exactly.
first one you saw. And then maybe the best use of a David Bowie song in all the movies, with the exception of Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou, which is awesome. But that whole movie is David Bowie songs, and most of them are from a Portuguese guy doing it in Portuguese, which is awesome.
Yeah. Hans Zimmer.
Hans Zimmer.
I mean, that was a
massive one, too.
Yeah, he had The Rock. The Crimson Tide, I love that score.
Ooh, underrated movie.
That's a movie I saw when I was in the Navy, and just the score and everything with
that. Were you on a submarine?
Pardon?
Were you on a submarine?
I was not. I was on an aircraft carrier. Mm.
Okay.
My brother was on a submarine for a while.
I don't know if I could do that.
Oh, no. He did training on a submarine, okay. But he stayed on a you can correct me if I'm wrong, but whatever those boats that went out to pull men and work on them and stuff when they needed it and stuff.
Subtenders, but I don't know like the exact classification. Yeah. That's.
I think when Aaron was here, we got into, speaking of Crimson Tide, we got into a big Jack Ryan debate. It was not who was the best Jack Ryan, but it was just. Has that how well has that character been portrayed overall in Hollywood?
Not very well. I'll tell you the series that I loved as a kid that they've never really done well with after a couple attempts is Clive Cussler and Dirk Pitt. I loved those books as a kid and as an adult.
Yeah.
They started getting really cheesy right when I was in, like, college. But they never pulled that one off. They've tried Sahara.
Yeah, Sahara was it. So yeah, that Matthew McConaughey. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know what? Right. I think it's better than Hollywood gave it credit for. Maybe. It's to me, it's like John Carter. John Carter's not a bad movie. You watch it, it just both were very poorly marketed, and mm-hmm. no one knew what they were getting into with it. So, I mean, Sahara, when I went back and watched it, I think a year or two ago, I was like, you know what? Not a bad movie.
Not a bad movie for what, TNT on a Sunday morning?
No, I think Matthew McConaughey's body of works are ups and downs, and I would consider it an up.
All right, all right.
Yeah.
Abraham Lincoln's in the submarine in the middle of the Sahara.
But you know, and one thing I heard that was coming out is it's a show or a Netflix, well, whatever. I mean, it's all kind of different mediums. I mean, same medium, but different delivery. Sure. Like a show that's basically focused on Stephen King stories.
Oh, so Castle Rock.
Oh, yeah, perfect.
It's built literally, the whole show is about the town of Castle Rock, and it will touch on almost every character. It will character they have a license to use.
Okay.
And it won't always be like, you know, it's not going to be a whole episode around Jack Nicholson's character from The Shining, but like maybe Leland Gaunt or maybe that character passes through in an episode or something, and... Hmm. Yeah, it looks pretty good, and it's got, I can't remember who's the star of that, but there's some good people in that.
Nice.
What's the best adaptation of...
Adaptation?
That too, for a Stephen King novel.
Shawshank.
Shawshank's a pretty... Or even Stand By Me is a solid one.
Oh, Stand By Me. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. I mean, that's...
What's the key to both of those? Short stories.
Exactly.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and that's one thing. So the feature I wrote... Which I don't know if you guys are into reading those kind of things. I'll send it your way.
Yeah, I would love it. Yeah,
but was essentially, I was inspired by Stand By Me. So it's a little part Stand By Me. It's a little, I've been away from this so
that's
long.
All right.
I just like kind of lost.
So this screenplay you were talking about earlier.
Yeah. So it's like a coming of age story, a kid that's dealing with bullies, finding himself. And there's this fantasy element. So you guys might like that. It's called The Dragon Within. And it has...
Is Bruce Lee in it?
Sounds like
Bruce Lee would be.
You could call it the corpse of Bruce Lee.
You could call it the Red Dragon Within, and it could be a cannibal.
Mm. Yeah, there you go. But with that, Stand By Me was one of my inspirations, and I was looking at... A friend of mine mentioned a movie called The Bridge of Tabitha.
The Bridge of Terabitha, right?
Terabitha.
Yeah, that's it.
And so I watched that a few times. I was like, all right, I like this vibe, but this is... I don't know. I was leaning the more of the Stand By Me route, even though it's about kids.
Hey,
it's just more realistic.
And by the way, another movie that holds up really well. I mean, Stand By Me holds up really well.
So well. And This Boy's Life was another one that I was kind of looking at because it was that kind of thing where, you know, you have this stepdad that's just a total jerk, and then how does a kid deal with it? So, at some point when we talk about movies, it's that one I entered into the Austin Film Festival, and when I was in the school, it wasn't like...
It wasn't what it is now.
It
was big, but...
Well, when I do things right away, you know, it's just like, I guess I'm calculated enough where I'm slower in the delivery, but I get where I want to go. So it's not like, I don't know, I'm kind of weird like that, where I guess I have it all in my head first before I do it, and I'm a bit of a perfectionist, which is, I don't know, that's a whole nother story. But looking at that thing, it was like, I don't feel like I put that much work into it. And I entered in the Austin Film Festival, let's try to do this, or the screenwriting conference, and it went to the second round.
Wow.
So it's like, I have something here, and now I just got to get off my lazy ass and write more and just get disciplined. But
so I asked Aaron on the episode on him, what was it like, the feeling when he saw Amazon giving him an alert that first book had sold?
It's pretty fucking amazing.
And the knowing that it was... And so what is it like for you... To have not just finish that script, because that in itself is a relief, but to have it get acceptance from not even peers, but superiors that are judging people, that have done this. What's that like? So you didn't just admit it, and one could have rejected it, or two could have said, it's good, and people said, not bad, but you actually went past other people that were literally out there trying to do the same thing as you. Something about it made them say, there's some, like you said, that made you know something was there.
Yeah, and that, and I think that's a good step because it wasn't like a semifinalist or a finalist, but just the fact that something, you know, I don't consider myself a good writer. I consider myself, you know, I'm very visual. I think I'm a pretty good director as far as documentaries are concerned. I mean, my timing's great in editing. Don't necessarily love editing, but looking at that, just not considering myself a great writer, the second round was amazing. And now I just need to just get some tweaks and just adjust. I want to get notes. It's a good thing getting notes and seeing because there's only so far. You get kind of numb when you're writing and whatnot. Sure. It just like you lose that objectivity.
Yeah.
And I think so often filmmakers, you know, especially young filmmakers, I made this mistake. I was writing a wrestling movie out of college.
Oh,
and now I see it so much better now. So it's something I need to work on, but it's just, you know, fun.
And then that damn wrestler came out, and you're like, son of a bitch, they stole my idea.
No, mine was a mockumentary.
Oh,
I don't care too much.
So I like it.
Very different than that, but...
Spinal Tap meets the wrestler.
kind of. Awesome. I wrote Spinal Tap into it, and so now it's like that won't play out as well. So I'll make some adjustments to it, but then... I think now that having produced and directed documentaries, now I have a better idea of what a documentary is.
Yeah.
So now when I do that mockumentary, I can add those elements.
Well, that's a good point. Yeah. By making a real one, you now know how to make a farcical one. And to your point, too, about that writing, too, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't that one of the great thing about being a director or working in a visual media is that even though you don't have to be a great writer to write a great screenplay. You have to have the picture. You have to have the story in your head, and you have to be able to explain to people where they'll see it in a visual way. I mean, you don't have to. I mean, there's a dramatic difference in writing dialogue than actually just writing a book, you know?
Yeah,
oh, yeah, definitely. Hard, yeah. Definitely. And I think I'm not as great with dialogue as I am plot.
Yeah.
So then it's finding those partnerships, like who's great with dialogue. I can get the general gist out, but just that.
It's hard not to make it sound like porn. It's hard not to make dialogue seem like it's cheesy and forced.
Well, yes, and it's hard. You know,
writers talk about
and
that
the
all
porn
the time.
Acting is just like they may have a great script, but the acting just can't
well, be. And almost and sometimes and sometimes giving your credit for being writing when you're writing something that's almost masturbatory too. And you could see where it would get that way because you're like, oh, this is the best stuff I've ever wrote. And then you do need that note and like, hey, dial that back a little. That's not as good as you think it is. Okay, well, let me reevaluate it and then.
Yeah, and it's good to have notes, and it's good to look at. I mean, if it's something that, I mean, your instincts tell you that this is something great, and you know, something you got to go with your instincts, but you also have to go with the notes, so you balance it out. And I think the key is I've seen so many movies where, and I applaud the people for the execution and directing a feature and all that, but the script, and I failed on shorts like that where they. I didn't have the right script. I consider my thesis film in undergraduate was one of those things. The execution, you know, it finally clicked for me. I was like, wow, I'm pretty good at this directing thing. But my script was weak. And so I put all this money into it and all that. But I learned from the process. Mm-hmm. But it's one of those things, having that mentorship, having somebody say, you know what, just break it down and tear it apart. And it's hard early on, but in the long run, it's good to know and develop that thick skin because you, instead of spending all this money and time for something that's dead on arrival, then you have a great script. And then when you execute it, it's just like Kevin Smith. Clerks wasn't it wasn't a glossy looking film. It wasn't, but the dialogue, the script.
Well, that's what he does.
The story. He's great at that. And the story, you know, it serves it where my stuff is. Looking pretty good, but the story was a little
weak
at that point.
I think maybe one of the best examples of a bad script that ends up being a movie that is beloved, or at least a cult classic, Starship Troopers. We were talking about it earlier today.
Yeah.
You can't tell me anyone ever read that script and thought, this is going to be brilliant. But I tell you what, it's a fun movie.
No
Very
doubt.
Fun movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It still holds up.
Yeah, the sequel's awful, but, you know. Hey,
and there was like five or six sequels.
Yeah, bad.
Yeah,
hey, you've mentioned it a couple times now since before we went on air and stuff too. So, old school wrestling fan?
Oh yeah. Grew up. I mean, blue collar. I mean, wrestling was the thing, and it was. I was at WrestleMania. We were talking about Hillbilly Jim, and I remember what was it? It was a WrestleMania when they introduced him, wasn't it? Like it was like the first or second WrestleMania or something.
Maybe. You might be right there. Yeah. If he was introduced, it would have probably been I guess it could have been the second one. I don't remember his debut. I remember the slop bucket, the first time he used it in a WrestleMania. I remember he's the biggest guy I've ever seen do a cartwheel when I was a kid and at that point. And he's in the Hall of Fame now.
And he just got inducted. But it was amazing when they first introduced him. And then I had no idea. And my buddy Stephen Walden, who's a great artist and one of my sponsors for my show, he was mentioning, like, I grew up watching him in Mid-South.
Okay.
Of course.
True territories.
Territory-wise, we had wrestling at the Chase, but didn't. Mm-hmm. Then here's WrestleMania and this on the big stage, and they keep cutting to this guy. Like, why are they cutting this guy? I don't think anything about that then. But now I look at it, they're cutting to him and this and that. And then he comes out and he saves Hulk Hogan. Like, who's this guy? Yeah. Wow. And, at that time, they sold it so well as a kid. I'm thinking, like, wow, this guy was a fan and blah blah blah, and he saved this guy, and what a great story.
Have you had a chance to see the Andre the Giant documentary yet?
I have not yet, but I need to watch
it. We talked about it last episode. It's worth watching.
It's really good.
Very worth watching. Hey, I'm gonna throw a curveball at you guys too. And there's been quite a few, way more than anybody knows. What's the best movie ever made about wrestling?
Pro wrestling.
Ready to Rumble's a good one. Ready to Rumble.
It's not that. And I felt really self-conscious when that came out, and I was thinking, like, oh man, now I can't.
They beat me to it.
But you know what? It's a great thing is like, that's such limited thinking that it's like, no, if this movie does great, then they're going to want to put out another wrestler movie.
It made money.
And then The Wrestler happened.
And The Wrestler was, that's a great movie.
While you guys debate it, I can't remember the name.
Is there anything to debate?
Well, no.
There's not that many, though.
Dude, there's more than, you got to think about No Holds Barred.
The movie's terrible.
That's not so good.
Have you seen, talk about a movie that doesn't hold up. When I was a kid, I loved it, but it's so bad.
Oh,
what's that smell?
One of the worst movies ever.
What was that?
No Holds Barred.
Oh, that was a
new one. Hogan or Rip. I'm doing air quotes for our fans who can't see. He pulls that guy out of the car, and they got and he's like, "What's that smell?" And the guy he's holding is just like crying, going, "Dookie." That's so
and this
bad.
This is off the kind of off. Well, it's in that era. So I remember we were at this close friend of my mom's house, and we were watching Commando. Remember that Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, Commando? Yeah. Horrible. And there was one scene, and back then I noticed this, like at one scene that Porsche gets all messed
trashed
up
on one side.
Yeah, and then it's like driving off, and it's like the continuity. It wasn't, and I was like, wait a second, that car was trash. And so, I guess I had an eye for these things back then. I didn't realize what all that was.
So I would throw out there that if you've never seen it, you should go out of way to see it. But my favorite wrestling movie about pro wrestling ever is a movie called Body Slam from 1986. Have you seen it?
You know what? I saw it back in the day. It had the guy that played Face, Dirk Benedict. Right?
Yeah, Dirk Benedict. Tanya Roberts, Rowdy Piper was the star.
Nice.
Lou Albano was the bad guy who managed. It was the Wild Samoans were the bad team.
Okay.
So, and Rowdy Piper and Fatu were the good guys. And Fatu, this was pre-big Samoan-looking Fatu. He was still slim. But there was a slew of pro wrestlers in that movie. And at the time, when you did have Mid-South, when you had AWA on ESPN when I got home from school, these weren't all WWE guys that you were watching or WWF at the time.
You're going to tell me that movie's better than The Wrestler?
But they're
different. It's a comedy,
they exist in different. Yeah, it's a comedy.
Sure.
But it's better than Ready to Rumble, and it's better than No Holds Barred.
Oh, yeah. Those
and that was one of those movies that I think I saw on HBO
all the time.
Or something like
Cinemax.
That. And then I could never find it. Then as I grew a little older, and there was another movie that was like, I think it was called Scavenger Hunt, or it was something about a scavenger hunt that was like a Cannonball Run-esque type movie. And I could never find it again.
I'd like to know what that one is.
Earthbound is another movie that I could never find again that we watched at the theater.
Gotcha. You remember the movie Gotcha?
I remember a little bit about, wasn't it a paintball movie?
Yeah, and it was Anthony Edwards in an action movie, essentially.
I was going to say, though, I mean, a lot of sports movies, wrestling is sports entertainment. It's hard to pull off a very serious sports movie that really gets you. It seems like a lot of sports movies end up in that kind of comedy realm. And it's very hard to pull off a comedic sports film without getting into the cheesy territory.
Oh, yeah. Well,
for example, a movie that does not hold up, as we were talking about earlier, Mighty Ducks. That movie stinks.
Well, yeah, you don't like Mighty. I still like Mighty Ducks.
What was the last time
you
watched it? I have not seen that in ages.
It sucks. I watched it a year or so ago, and I still enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah?
Did you watch it with your kids, though?
No, it was on TV, and I left it go. Cool. I enjoy Space Jam when it's on. It's awful. Yeah.
And Space Jam was directed by this guy named Joe Pitka, who is a director of photography on a lot of commercials, made a lot of money, and apparently he was like a director DP. He had all these white cases and a lot of time for all his gear and camera equipment. And then at times, like I think at one point, the boom operator, the sound guy, is standing on this guy's white case. And this guy was the motherfucker. You know, I've never worked with them, but guys that I worked with back in the day.
He was temperamental, huh?
Oh, man, this guy was just insane. But
it makes sense that he made commercial, because that movie does look like it's shot like a commercial.
Yeah, so he would MF this and that. Yeah. And it was just a...
What's the good part about that movie is when Bill Murray shows up.
Oh, the best part, yeah. He's the best part.
I don't know if I've ever seen it. I mean, know of it, but I don't know if I've ever watched it all the way through.
He's Bill Murray. Anytime Bill Murray, even before he was Bill Murray, he was great in movies. So.
Yep.
I mean, the classic comedies of all time, Caddyshack,
oh, man.
Which I haven't watched in a while. But
it holds up.
Oh, yeah. In the top five, probably, for me, of funniest movies ever made.
Groundhog Day. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just...
Brilliant
concept. Harold Ramis.
That's a movie that's kind of gotten better with age. Like
Groundhog Day. Yeah, it seems like the millennials and the young generations have recently discovered it, and it's got legs. And quite possibly the greatest meme I've ever read in my entire life was a few years ago. It jumped up in my time hop, and it was somebody said, "I think this year, in honor of Groundhog's Day, they should announce a sequel to Groundhog and just re-release the original." Like, that's maybe the greatest idea in the world.
I love the people who've tried to figure out how many days that he spent before he...
I've estimated, they said, like...
Yeah, at least a decade.
Yeah, something like that. Like, that's... I mean, again, like, we were talking about Karate Kid earlier, and when I was in intro to drama or something like that. I was a fine arts major, so I took, you know, you had to experience a little bit. They, in script writing, they taught Karate Kid was one of the examples they used of a perfectly, I'm not saying a great script, but a perfectly constructed three-act script. Mm-hmm. What movie did you just bring up? What were you just saying?
Mighty Ducks?
No, just now. Literally just now.
Groundhog Day?
Oh, yeah. God dang it. I can't even remember what we were talking about.
Space Jam?
Nah, forget it. I lost my point.
That's probably the worst.
No, well, the director of Karate Kid also directed Rocky.
Oh, yeah.
And John Avildsen, and this movie called The Power of One, which is with Stephen Dorff. It was in South Africa. It was like this apartheid, this kid growing up as an orphan. I mean, great drama.
Which is interesting, because Karate Kid 2 is about the power of love.
Yeah.
Or the glory of love, actually.
Like Power of Love is not in
that. That's Back to the Future.
Yeah.
Yeah, I knew it all tied together. Come on.
Yeah, wait, I suck? Is that what you were trying to say a while ago?
I like Peter Cetera.
Yeah.
If I was a good musician, I always thought of these parody song ideas, but I would never pull it off. And one buddy of mine, and I was talking to The Smash on my podcast. I keep shamelessly plugging my podcast.
Wait, what is your podcast name?
It's called Conversations with Calcaterra. But we were talking about parody songs, and with Casey, my friend Craig Hawksley, they had this song called Knights of White Castle. And then I'm thinking, it's brilliant. Mm-hmm. And I was thinking of my buddy Jeff Ritter and I. We were talking about just different parody songs, but we weren't musicians or anything. And I should have put two and two together with the musicians that I start knowing during college. But he had a version of Paperback Writer that was Illinois Driver.
There's some Paperback Writer you could come across. Yeah. Did you? We talked about it on our podcast one time, but there's a stand-up comic that has taken a Beatles song, and I can't remember which one it was, but he's got an Instagram where he goes to Trader Bob's or Trader Joe's, or what is it? Trader Joe's. Yeah, Trader Joe's. And almost every item they have, the name of every item, works perfectly in the beat of a chorus of a Beatles song. It's the same beats. And he's got a whole Instagram dedicated to him picking it up and singing it to the tune of a Beatles song. I mean,
that's
like,
amazing.
Yeah, it's impressive. I also discovered a new Instagram today, too, of a stand-up semi-successful, again, back to that word, stand-up comic that is making a living doing stand-up comedy. But I can't think of his name off the top of my head, but he's got a brilliant Instagram where he uses the Face Swap app.
Uh-huh.
And he does, like, all the voices for the Kardashians are Trump, and oh my god, it's pretty good.
Brilliant. I love it.
And he's and even his dumb ones almost made me wet myself. He's got one where he goes.
Was this Frank Caliendo? He can tell me.
It's not. No. he doesn't do the voice as well.
Okay.
So, I mean, that's part of it. But there's one where he just goes up to his mom. I'll constantly go, hey, mom, you know what? She goes, what? He goes, chicken butt. And then he wakes her up at 4 a.m. and does it, or when she's in the bathroom and does it. And he's in the weirdest voice, and he's using those voice modulators for those. Oh, God, man. It was a tough drive down the road for me. Does he do Bane? No, he does not do Bane. And your Bane is awful.
I know. So stop it. It's a whole point.
I don't enjoy your Bane. Did you know, speaking of odd choices, and I love Christopher Nolan films when he does them right, but...
What doesn't he do right?
Interstellar was okay. It fell apart at the end badly for me.
Couldn't find their car keys, right?
Yeah. And then that movie, the last of the Dark Knight movies, not very good. But
damn it, we talked about this. That movie's good.
But it was no Batman and Robin.
Oh, that's true. Joel Schumacher.
Oh, God. Oh. He just like tanked that franchise.
but
it's time to chill out.
But his original plan for Bane and Tom Hardy in that, his original plan was actually to not be able to understand what Bane said at all, because he thought that if you made him scary enough and Tom Hardy did enough emoting with a half of a mask on, that you wouldn't have to know what he was saying to be scared by him.
And that's not a bad choice, necessarily.
It's not the right vehicle.
Subtitle it.
Not the right vehicle for it. I mean, maybe, like, I could see him doing something like that in a very good Tom Hardy movie, Bronson. Charlie Bronson, but I couldn't see him doing it in a Batman movie.
Yeah. I've not seen Bronson.
Oh, it's about I've heard the of it. Most famous criminal in England's criminal system.
Yeah.
Charles Bronson?
Yeah, Charlie Bronson. Yeah, it was. And he made.
Did his people have a death wish?
No. Well, he seemed to have, but he cost them tens of millions of dollars in riots and things that he had done over there. He would get to the kitchen, lube himself up with butter and oil, so they couldn't grab him, and then just beat the piss out of people as they were trying to take him. And Tom Hardy plays it brilliantly, because in the film, it's part biographical retellings of that, what happened, and then it's part inner monologue for the character, in which Tom Hardy is in, like, Jester's makeup, and just, he's an underrated actor.
Oh, he's brilliant. He's a nut, man. There's a movie I saw when I was down at... The screenwriting conference at the Austin Film Festival, called Legend, about these Irish gangsters, and so he played these twins.
Oh, I have not seen
that. Check it out. I mean, so it was a couple years ago I saw. And,
he played the Moonshining Brother, and I thought that was an underrated film. But
What was it, Leonardo DiCaprio? The Mountain Revenant. Man one. The Revenant, yeah.
Which he was way better than Leo in that movie.
Tom Hardy is just, I mean, and he's one of those, because I probably method, I mean, he gets so deep into the character.
I want to come back to him, but I do want to bitch about that movie. I finally watched that movie about 4 or 5 months ago. Did not like it. Did not like it one bit.
And it seems like one of those ones that you need to see on the big screen.
Maybe. I still wouldn't have liked it. So here's my thought. Just because you really go out and put yourself in that environment doesn't make it a better film and make your performance better. I'm not saying Leo did bad, but that was not a best actor. Leo was better in What's Eating Gilbert Grape. He was better in that movie. Tom Hardy was the best actor in that movie.
Would you say Leo's acting had some growing pains?
Yeah, it really
but
did.
But didn't Tom Hardy get a Best Supporting Actor? Or at least nominated. A nomination,
But he was better. But back to him, what's that movie where it's just him in the car? And it's unbelievably good.
Leo?
No, Tom Hardy.
I don't know.
The whole movie is him driving in a car. And the only conversations that he had, the only other conversations is him on the phone, but you only hear it from his end.
That's interesting. I might have to find that.
That's like a very underrated movie, and one that people aren't going to go back and see. There was a Kevin Spacey movie in the 90s called Big Kahuna.
I'm familiar. Yeah. I think he directed that as well.
And it was based on a play, which you could see how it worked as a play, but there's only three people in the whole movie, and they all takes place in one hotel room. And man, you got to act your ass off on that. It's him, Danny DeVito, and I can't think of the kid, but it was, if you've ever seen, what is the teenage movie? My daughter recently discovered it and loves it. It's got Jennifer Love Hewitt in it, where she's the kid spends the whole night trying to chase her down, Amanda. Gosh darn it.
Oh,
Can't Hardly Wait?
Is that it?
I'm thinking Can't Hardly Wait, but it's not.
It's
I know what you're talking about.
Is this the one the guy sings Paradise City?
That's it. Yeah, that's it. So the douchebag boyfriend that Jennifer Love Hewitt calls a fag in front of the whole car. No, she breaks up with him when somebody yells fag and this hurts him and puts him over the top. That that was like where his spirit broke. That the douchebag
jock. Can't Hardly Wait.
Yeah, all right.
Yeah.
The douchebag jock. He's right on, the third role in this.
I didn't really. I guess she was in that. Yeah.
He's the third person in Big Kahuna, and you would not think. Well, this kid was in Teeny Bopper movies, and that was his big claim to fame. But man, it's a pretty good movie. Now that said, it's Kevin Spacey, and he's got a bit of a black eye, justifiably so, in that little bit. I mean, I think the Me Too movement has kind of covered up, and people kind of forgot.
One thing I like about Big Kahuna
is the Big Kahuna burger.
Yeah.
That's a tasty burger. That's a
tasty burger. Yeah. Thanks,
Jules. I went over in Fairfax. Yeah. Hey, dude. Gentleman peed on your rug, dude.
Oh, man, that's good stuff there. So
that's probably I'm not much for making list, but I would say if I have a list of, you know, my top 10, Big Lebowski has to be in there. Sharp. Breaking things.
So we do the Mount Rushmore of everything on here. He brought that to the thing. So you pick your Mount Rushmore of comedies or your Mount Rushmore of something.
Don't hear your Mount Rushmore of films and bands since you seem to like music.
Yeah, oh, boy.
So the four, it's just picking four.
Pick your four. We'll go with movies.
Lebowski, you'd have to have the dude on, on Rushmore. But then, you know, you'd have to have Walter as well. So, I mean, it's like that. So John Goodman, and that was fucking amazing.
By the way, the best thing about the new Roseanne is John Goodman's the best actor on it. But have you ever heard the story of when the Coens were doing that movie and the famous ending to the movie? Well, sometimes you eat the bar, sometimes bar eats you.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, you can barely. It does not sound like Sam Elliott saying bear.
Yeah.
But so they did that take about 12 times, and. And finally, Sam Elliott gets pissed. He goes, you know what? You guys just tell me what the hell I'm doing wrong, and I'll fucking change it. And they both go, nothing. We just really like hearing you read the lines.
That's like a great story.
That is a great story.
Tell me what I'm doing, I'll change it.
Yeah, he's like, no, you're doing it great every time. We just love it so much. That's
cool. Yeah, those guys are amazing. So, Lebowski.
All right.
I would say Shawshank.
Okay.
That's such a great movie. I haven't watched it in quite a while, but I think, as we talked about, it holds up.
Oh, it's always on TNT. So.
Perfect movie. One of the perfect. I mean, everything's perfect about that movie.
Yeah, that was just amazing. Probably Empire Strikes Back.
Okay.
This movie just, if someone only watched one Star Wars movie, watch Empire Strikes Back.
That's a big one.
Even if you don't know the characters, I mean, it stands alone.
It's a good, well-made movie.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, and then Goodfellas.
Man, good movie too.
Yeah.
What was Goodfellas, and what was the other of the gangster movies that he made?
Casino was another one.
Yeah,
that was in 95.
I tell you this. I think if you could get rid of the last 30 minutes of Casino,
the third act is a little rough.
I might have liked it. It would have been better than Goodfellas for me. But Goodfellas keeps me through the whole thing.
Oh yeah.
The
yeah.
characters in Casino, I think I liked a little more, but. And we're also arguing a 10 out of 10 on both scale. You know what I mean? Which one's better? They're both great.
Oh, yeah.
Goodfellas is better.
What's that?
Goodfellas is a...
Well, I think it was more acclaimed, too. But Casino was a pretty damn solid film.
Problem with Casino is Sharon Stone's character is just terrible.
Yeah.
I mean, she's not the worst actress in the world, but in that movie, she's definitely the low spot.
I think she probably got a good review for that. I think you're pretty judgmental.
Yeah.
Hey, what about back to the Coen brothers? This is a random question, and it's one I'm glad you're here. What's the best directorial debut of all time?
Ooh.
So we're not going to answer my music question?
I'm sorry. I forgot you did, too. Well, you doubled up.
Yeah, we'll finish greedy, and then we'll jump into music. Right. I need a greedy
on your part.
Yeah, you bastard. You rat bastard.
So, and I bring it up because if you've never seen it, Blood Simple, the Coen Brothers
first movie. Yeah, I saw it, but it didn't, you know, to me, that didn't blow me away.
Maybe the reason I love it so much is because I saw it in the mid-90s when it came out.
Yeah.
And I loved it.
And then, like, Marty Scorsese's, you know, Who's That Knocking at My Door? Yeah. That didn't blow me away.
Hell, even Spielberg, you know, with...
Duel was his first one, yeah. Wasn't it?
Missouri native in that. Weaver? Dennis Weaver? Was that the...
I'm not familiar.
I think he was the protagonist in that movie.
I mean, you look at, like, as far as momentum and the changing of times with indie films, I mean, you look at, like, Kevin Smith or Robert Rodriguez. El Mariachi.
Yeah, that's a good one, man.
Yeah, I mean, that's an amazing film.
I would almost go with Slacker. It is so well done.
What about Sam Raimi?
Yeah, that's a good one.
I don't even really like horror movies.
And he probably peaked. I mean, not even peaked, because I think Unbreakable is incredibly good, but those two, but that man.
Oh, for M. Night Shyamalan, Ding Dong.
Yeah, she said Sam Raimi, sorry.
Yeah. So, Evil Dead,
yeah. But yeah, the first Evil Dead, I mean, it was groundbreaking.
The second one was better.
Yeah, well, the second one was the first one, but they just had more of a budget.
Yeah, and it was. Made my wife watch Evil Dead and consecutive Halloweens and Evil Dead 2, and then we're going to do Army of Darkness, and then we jumped ahead and watched the remake, which I thought was better than people gave it credit for. But
I liked Army. That's the first film that I saw in that series, and I loved it. It was fun.
Army of Darkness,
the effects kind of, a little cheesy, but
those were Sam Raimi effects.
It was fun, yeah.
But it also might have cracked me up more than any movie I'd seen at the time, so that was pretty cool. Man, I tell you what, though, it's... You know, hitting a grand slam in your directorial debut, I mean, of all the things, Ben Affleck has a great directorial debut.
What's this?
Gone Baby Gone?
Yeah.
With his brother?
Mm-hmm.
Damn good movie.
Yeah.
And then he came back.
Argo was really good.
Argo, yeah.
But yeah, I think M. Night
Sixth Sense.
That wasn't his first feature.
Oh, that is right.
He had a comedy, which, and I forget what it was, what's called, but that was the first notable feature that came out in theaters. I think his comedy just, like,
here's the only
DOA.
One. There's no argument on this. What is...
I'm looking at a list right now. Top 30
We're going to come back to it, but this is... There is only one answer to this question. What director from his directorial debut to his most famous cinematic achievement surprises you of how different it is the most? You don't have to think
about
it.
That's a tough question.
It's Peter Jackson.
Yeah, because his first one was
Meet the Feebles, Brain Dead, Bad Taste, Frighteners.
I love the Frighteners.
Amazing. But then for them to give him $1 billion to go make The Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, and then King Kong.
King Kong I have a problem with.
Sure.
But Lord of the Rings, those are well-made movies.
Yeah.
But I mean, the fact that you watch the Meet the Feebles guy make a Tolkien's books into a film... Unbelievable. You talk about a big risk. I mean, he also created the way we do trilogies now. Film them all in a row. You know?
I mean, that's smart.
Let's go to the top 10. Let's just go top 10.
Top 10.
It's a lot of old shit. Do you want me to read on it all?
Start at 10 and blow through it. If we want to comment, we'll comment.
All right. Hold on. I want to say that before we get that, number 15 was Rob Reiner's This Is Spinal Tap. That would have been
amazing. Oh, that's a top. Hell yeah. That's a good one.
All right. What about Mel Brooks? I mean.
Oh, yeah. I don't know what his debut was.
It wasn't on here, but. All right. So number 10, Steve McQueen's Hunger.
Okay.
Number 9 is.
I didn't realize he directed.
Yeah, I didn't either.
The actor Steve McQueen?
Yeah.
Oh, he was long dead before 2008. It has to be a new Steve McQueen.
Oh, okay.
Okay. I'm missing that one.
Number 9 is Knife in the Water with Roman Polanski. We know him.
Yeah, it's hard to argue with Roman Polanski.
Number 8 is John Huston. He did The Maltese Falcon, which is a great movie.
Oh, yeah.
That is not bad, yeah.
Great classic Hollywood director.
Number 7, Francois Truffaut. The 400 Blows.
Yeah.
You know that one?
I do.
Yeah. Number 6 is Killer of Sheep by Charles Burnett.
Don't know that.
Yeah, that's one of the problems with a list like this. We're thinking of Hollywood movies, and there's foreign filmmakers and stuff. And
number 5 is Terrence Malick. He did Badlands.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Terrence Malick has made a lot of really
And he was one of those guys that made a film, then kind of burnt out, didn't do anything for a lot of... He made a couple films, and then came back with A Thin Red Line.
Yeah, and then...
Oh, that's not bad.
That whole trilogy, it was Thin Red Line, it was... what was those? It was 3 films, and what was cool about that whole series is he told it from a different... essentially the same story from the other perspective every time.
Are you sure that was Malick, or was that Clint Eastwood?
No, wasn't it? I'll look.
Because he did that too.
You keep going, and I'll do it.
He had like the one version that was American version, and the other one was.
Oh, that was him. Wasn't
it? I haven't seen those, so I'll have to check those out.
Number four, Breathless, was Jean-Luc Godard.
Godard, yeah.
Number three. Now I agree with this one, even though I'm not a horror guy, as I said, but George Romero's Night of the Living Dead.
Oh yeah,
that's a good one.
Number two, Eraserhead, David Lynch.
Oh, my God.
That's a tough one to watch. I was watching that when I was eating. So, yeah, with the chicken scene. Yeah, mistake.
And number one is probably, needs to be number one, Citizen Kane and Forrest Wells.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one, too.
It's a little overrated, but, I mean,
what it was at the time.
What they did at the time, it was groundbreaking. Yeah, and the stuff. Nothing else like it.
And if you've never watched, what is it, RKO-184? I believe is the HBO movie that was about.
Oh yeah,
the movie.
Yeah.
He
with
like,
Liev Schreiber was in that. Yeah,
and he was doing like 20-hour shoots, and to get the perfect shot, and he would film it from an angle and not like it, so he would get guys to pickaxe to get the whole, break the concrete to get lower and lower and lower. And
I guess I just always remember Orson Welles from the TV show The Critic, when they do the impression of him.
Oh, yeah.
Transformers, you know, he was the narrator Transformers, the movie. When
Unicron or something like that?
I mean, which was great. That's the cartoon. That was the best Transformers movie.
Oh, so good.
Although I was pleasantly surprised when I saw the first Michael Bay rendition
that
of
was
that.
Not
I
was too
like,
bad.
I was like, yeah, you know,
oh, the
what?
First
I expected
one was
it
solid.
To suck.
Yeah.
And then all the other ones were basically the first one with a few different characters.
Yeah. Unfortunately, the thing that is like the, and trust me, this is a reach in when it comes to comparisons. That is kind of the Michael Jordan of movies, because like in the NBA was kind of ruined by what Michael Jordan did, because then you had a generation of people emulating what he did. And we got all the Allen Iversons who were good, but not as they just would chuck the ball up all the time.
It's the weirdest analogy I've ever
So Transformers, one of the great things about it is it didn't have much regard for the environment around it. It was destroying cities. It was giving way.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, you know, the knocks on G.I. Joe and Superman, Man of Steel and stuff, there was too much disaster porn. That movie, the first Transformers, was the first one where they really like, let's destroy these cities and stuff. And then so many movies have followed suit, and there's just no weight to them. That one, at least, of all the things in the world, Michael Bay gave us a little emotional attachment to some of the characters in it.
You think they would like lure them out? Hey, let's go to the suburbs, or let's go out to Chicago. Wasn't the first Transformer? One of them was in Chicago. Let's go to a cornfield.
So it was a fake city,
out, 30 minutes away.
Something. It was a fake city in like Arizona or New Mexico.
Gotcha.
It was a fictional city that they went to and destroyed. But good movie, bad sequels.
Yeah,
and a lot of them. A lot.
Five? Are they up to five now?
I don't know. I tell you.
I've only seen the first one.
Yeah, the night something, blah, blah.
Last night, yeah.
Can't turn Optimus Prime heel.
Fucked up the Dinobots. If you fuck up the Dinobots, you're messing up in movies.
They're like the Dinobots.
You're a retard.
What were the Constructicons?
They damaged that one, too, because the Constructicons turned into this thing that wasn't quite what it was. It's like, I want Devastator. I want him pounding everything.
It's Optimus Prime and everybody else.
You're way off. Grimlock was as good a leader as Optimus Prime. Voice box was irrevocably damaged, and that's why he sounded like an idiot, but he was just as smart and even better fighter.
I really wish they had screwed up G.I. Joe. I was a Yo-Jo guy as a kid.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I tell you what was the best in that whole canon, the comic book.
It was written by Larry Hama, who did the back of the cards, which is what made it so good.
Okay.
He loved it.
Duke was supposed to die in the movie, but apparently after
Screen
Optimus Prime died, it did not fly, so they decided, we can't do that twice.
Yeah, so they had to bring Rock and Channing Tatum back to do it.
No, we're talking about the cartoon.
Oh, the cartoon.
Remember when Centaur throws his fucking snake through Duke and he takes one for the team?
Oh, that's
he was supposed to die.
Those
cartoons are freaking great.
Optimus Prime thing scared off.
My favorite. Yeah. What's your favorite G.I. Joe cartoon episode?
Favorite episode? God.
It's got to be Day of the Viper, dude. Come on.
The three-parter where they had the weather machine?
That was like the first one. was the first one. Day of the Viper was the best one because it was all told from the perspective of G.I. Joe was getting these anonymous tips that the Viper was coming. And everywhere they showed up, Cobra was like a two steps behind them, and they were thwarting Cobra on like all these small things. And Cobra's getting pissed. And by the end of the episode, it's time, Joe's. The Viper is coming. And so they're at their base, coming to their base. The Viper's coming to Joe headquarters. So they're at their base, and they're all lined up, and they're ready to fight this thing. And a window wiper from, like, Yugoslavia, who can't say wiper, was coming to do the windows. And that was the whole episode. I was
That's
like,
insane.
Even as a kid of 10, I was like, this is good. Yeah. This is something.
It wasn't the same guy that did Cobra Commander's voice, the guy that did Starscream.
Yeah. Right.
Like, ah!
Yeah.
Had that screech.
Maybe he should have deserved an Oscar for voice acting back in the day.
That's fine, Mark Hamill.
All right, let's we're well over an hour now, so let's jump on track again. And so you back to what you've done. You've done so films versus documentaries. What got you off of like writing the scripts for like features and into documentaries?
Writing. I mean, it's a bunch of shorts and have some scripts I'd like to produce, but it's documentaries. Just kind of easier to produce in a sense, like as far as on the front end.
Yeah.
With documentaries, a lot of the work is on the back end, where narratives, it's a script, it's storyboards, it's things like that.
You gotta find a through line in the story of this person.
Yeah.
Thing, and
yeah. And so with the documentary, it's essentially you can find that, you discover that as you go, where, you know, with narrative, you're creating that world, which is great. I want to get back into that. But yeah, something about real people and just stories. Sometimes the truth is stranger than fiction, or it's just real. Yeah,
it's true.
Just connecting to people.
Well, I want to segue off of that into your podcast.
All right.
So your podcast, speaking of not strange, that would be the wrong word, but you have a very diverse group of people that
you
talk to and stuff on there. You've had like spiritual healist. And, what's that wrestler from St. Louis you did?
Curtis Wilde.
Yeah,
politician. Yeah.
Yeah, politician, wrestler. I mean, and even you've had Benji Molina.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Benji's great.
Is it just relationships you've made through filmmaking and stuff where you've gotten in contact with these people, or where are you getting, are you just reaching out?
Yeah, so a lot of it is just that connection.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's just so important in life, you know, just having connections. And looking at that, like I read Benji's book, and it was just like, wow.
Yeah.
And then even as a you know, in a filmmaking perspective, it was like, you know, you have to, you know, you have to go for it. You have to live your dream, this and that. It's scary. I mean, had I read that book maybe 15 years ago, but looking at that, also the sacrifice that his father made. So as I'm getting older, it's like, yeah, sometimes we need to sacrifice for, you know, the dreams of others, or for, you know, for kids and whatnot.
I do like on your page how you put whatever important quote from your actual episode
on the
thing. And I like his about his dad's the real Hall of Famer in that.
Yeah.
Pretty solid.
And you're looking at that, and he didn't realize, and that was, I'm probably spoiling, like the book and the, you know, I don't know if we talked about this so much on the podcast, or a little bit, I don't want to spoil the book, but it's pretty amazing how he didn't realize. He's like, oh, well, my dad never made it and this and that. Well, why didn't he?
Yeah.
Because he focused on the family and changed his focus and changed his perspective. And then look at what he generated. Three World Series winning catchers in the same family. Yadi, you know, I mean,
two Gold Glovers.
I think Jose maybe had a Gold Glove.
Did
I'm not
he?
Sure,
so all
but
three
he was solid.
Hat-trick.
Yeah. But, you know, I mean, Benji had a couple All-Star appearances, a couple World Series.
Well, Benji was the star first, you know, before
Yadi.
Yeah,
just a solid catcher. You know, he is more like, you know, he's like the workhorse. I mean, he had some success where Yadi is just, you know, Yadi's Yadi.
Well, but if you remember correctly, I mean, Yadi, he was, yes, young defensive wizard, but one of the people were like, well, is he ever going to be able to hit like his brother? I mean, he worked as hard to try to live up to what Benji was on the offensive side of the plate.
Yeah, Benji did pretty good, and the fact he hit for the cycle was pretty amazing.
Yeah.
And he jokes being a slow guy and all that, getting
Yadi
that
would
triple.
Have to get a ball trapped under a fence to get to the cycle. Yeah. That and triple would be hard.
But here's the thing, I mean, Yadi or Molina had, like, what, 10 stolen bases last year?
He was 10 for 10 at one point.
Yeah. But you just look at the guy's work ethic and that. So, yeah. You know, looking at that story and having that connection, and there's just, you know, these layers. And it was just something that I know a lot of people, and I've always thought, like, oh, this story might make a good documentary. But just the time that it takes to make a documentary, I can't do it. But like some musician friends, like, oh, I'd love to put a music video together, do you know, something, but you know, just the resources, and it's just, you know, if you don't have the resources, then I have to, I'm the one putting it together.
And that's what led you, that's what led you to start the podcast?
Yeah, and it's like the podcast is maybe 3 hours of post-production, and most of it is picking those quotes out and finding that, and I didn't start doing that until recently.
Okay. Yeah, we're going to start. One of the things I've decided that we were going to start doing is
good to let me know on air.
Yeah, it's not like you're gonna, you and Bender aren't going to do anything on it anyway. But I'm going to start like randomly filming some parts and because our YouTube thing, we've got a now YouTube channel thing that where we're putting up like beer reviews and
I'm gonna
do a whiskey review this Thursday. But I'm also going to, in order to, because YouTube I think is a very good way to drum up traffic. I'm going to start like filming parts of the episode and just release that snippet as a YouTube. Say, yeah, be on the lookout for episode 130 or something.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But, and then like the one problem, like what you just said, I picture me like really fighting myself. What do I use? You know, what do I pick out? What's the best one to pick out? And, you know, because, you know, as a person that, I edit all of our stuff. I do all the post-production on our stuff, too, so I can kind of feel your pain about how you said editing sucks. But and it's not like I do a lot. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah, I don't do a lot either, but it's just like picking those quotes, listening, going through it, tagging, and doing all that. It takes a bit of time.
It's effort. I mean, it's not like it happens just like that. But so where – I mean, how often do you release? I know it's you're consistent in that – you're not every
I'm
week.
I'm streaky.
Yeah, that's what it is. Yeah,
I'm streaky, so
word.
Like I'm on a good streak right now. You know, I'm trying to do it once a week, but this will be come like December. This will be my third year. So hopefully I have about maybe 70 or so at that point, which is not horrible. If it's, you know, if it's even every other week, if that's my average, then I'm happy with that.
Do you go to them mostly, or do they come to you?
Yeah, mostly I'll go to people. Yeah. And, you know, with Benji, that was somebody that, like, oh, I have to talk to this guy. I ran into a guy named Steve Flowers, who has a podcast called Two Birds on the Bat. He's part of that team. Benji's on that. And I was like, oh, you know Benji, blah, blah, blah. And Steve and I hit it off and had a great conversation. And he's like, oh, yeah, come out to our show, and, you know, and then that way, because I was reaching out to Benji on Twitter, which I know, and you and I connected on Instagram.
Instagram, yeah.
And it's cool. Social media is, you know, it allows that.
Isn't it great, though? I mean, that's how we've gotten a couple guests this show already. We got a hockey podcast, a blues podcast here in the studio a couple months ago, and that's one thing we've been challenged by our dictator over here is to...
I'll take it.
Get benevolent leader.
He does 90% of the work. It's just to get more guests and to, you know, we've been talking kind of most of the episode about how sometimes media is on the coast, and there's no reason why we can't have a podcast community, a directorial community here in St. Louis.
Well, I feel we'd also be remiss to not mention, too, that we have one of the people that I first reached out to after you and I tried to do this a few months ago, and it just was the worst time in the world.
Sure,
for us. And we went, like, no guests for, like, a good 3-4 months because just timing. But we do have a mutual person that's been on both our shows, and that's a good friend of our show, Shane Presley.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And you talk about a guy that's been out there just... working
hardest man.
Oh, yeah, he hustles, no doubt.
Hardest working man. See those
podcasts. I think since we've started this podcast, he's released 3 episodes.
Yeah,
like you and I to this one. This one in particular. We sat down to talk an hour ago, and he's probably released. He's probably editing his 4th for the week. So.
And liking all of our podcasts.
That's right. He's a great dude. Great dude, and as supportive as it gets. So, and like you said, we reached out through Instagram, and that's kind of the way I did it with the guys of the ABC podcast. And yeah, I mean it's an interesting times we live in, where we can, you know, we live in a city of a million or two people, whatever St. Louis metro area is now, 3 million people. And literally 20 years ago, there's a good chance that we may have never even ran across each other in the same
venue. Very good chance. 100% chance, probably, honestly. Yeah.
Maybe we would have been at a Cardinal game together and not known it. And that was it, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're in a different world. So, all that said... And, you know, when I asked you about going, is there ever going to be, you know, the way of Horatio, you're going to migrate west or whatever, what's next for Ken Calcaterra? And I can't say it as eloquently as you. So.
Calcaterra.
Yeah, didn't work.
Yeah, that had a little bit of a what? I don't know what the accent was there.
Yeah, racist. That had a floppishness to it. So
no, it was more like a yodeler. Yeah, that's what I would expect. Like a Swedish guy.
Yeah, like an SNL character.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's a good question. I'd like to do some more writing. A buddy of mine who animates out in L.A., who's going to be relocated.
They animate for anyone in particular?
DreamWorks right now. So nice. His name's Steve Meyer. He he's putting together all kinds of great things. We've been trying to nail him down for a couple of years to talk, get time in his schedule to work on a podcast. But yeah, he edits. Right now he's working animating on How to Train Your Dragon 3.
Oh, they just awesome. Literally announced that today. It was the official announcement for the title.
Yeah, so he's been working on that for a while. He was on Boss Baby, so I went visited DreamWorks with him a while back.
Solid film. Watched it with my kids.
He was showing me clips, before the movie was even made. And so,
did he get to meet Alec Baldwin? Because that would have been awesome.
I don't know if he did or not. They're usually separate. Yeah. But he and I have talked about some ideas. So he had an idea that he generated that I want to start working on, and then hopefully send it to him for notes. So I think writing at some point, as far as bigger things, want to keep the podcast going because I'm enjoying that.
Yeah.
And it takes a while to build up the audience. I'm, on 50, so I'm thinking it's 100 or 2 to really get momentum.
Yeah.
Building up the Instagram because I have a great catalog of photos, so I'm trying to do that.
Awesome. So we got a good amount of momentum, and then we changed the name, like we had talked about.
Yeah, that throws you off.
It really did. We jumped back. But one of the things I've done to counteract that is with this month is trending to be go back to those numbers before I didn't change the name finally. But one of the things I've also done to help that is we're also doing more now. Like I said, we've mentioned the YouTube. So far, the best episode we've done in the the most downloaded episode that we've had in the last probably 30 or so has been we debuted a new spinoff called That Year in Comics, where we break down one single year.
Yeah, I saw the ad for that. I'm looking forward to checking that out.
We're doing 1996 this Thursday, so 1986, which is inarguably the best year in the history of comics.
What was out there in those days?
Dark Knight Returns from Frank Miller.
Oh, yeah.
The Watchmen. Fantastic. Mouse, which won Pulitzer Prizes. And, Dark Horse Comics started. It was Daredevil Reborn by Frank Miller. It's what comics grew up and became great. So
yeah.
That has generated a lot of people. And, you can look at your IP addresses that download. A bunch of brand new downloads that I never had before.
Awesome, man.
So,
congrats. That's fantastic.
And that's one thing that we're doing. And kind of, I had zero experience on editing or sound or anything when I started this, but I have absolutely even less when it comes to filming and doing that. But, I kind of want to get into more of that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that we're going to do this anytime soon, but he's got a little bit of a very minute amount of experience of writing some sketches and things like that for when he was at Mizzou and some things. And I, not to say we're going to be a sketch comedy show, but I picture in the next 3 to 6 months not just doing these beer reviews and these things like that, but actually trying to do, for lack of a better word, I picture old ESPN hockey commercials where they used to have those great hockey commercials.
I love when you tell me things podcast on air. So I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, sure.
That's cool. But that's just me letting you peek behind the inner workings of my brain where I picture us going and doing stuff like that.
I give you shit all the time. You definitely run this ship, and
I just show up.
So I think it's fun. I think, like you said, this is a weird and crazy medium we got, and building our numbers up, I guess, is the goal.
Well, yeah, and I thought about that too. It's nice to, I enjoy the conversations, and that's great.
Yeah.
But all in all, then when I get to the editing portion, it's just I want people to listen to it.
Right. That's it. I think that's the best thing. Yeah. We have fun. This last episode we did is fun. And you're in the moment, and it's fun. When you upload it, though, you can't help but think, man, how can I get more people listening? Uh-huh.
Absolutely. No, but it's just slow progress. There's no, at least for us, monetary that we'll probably ever get. But the fact that I was able to be from this podcast originally as a guest, just like you, Ken.
Yeah.
To be a permanent co-host.
And good friend. And
a good friend. And, Yeah, I mean, I
been, okay, friend.
He brought me. You're a good friend to me, only because you helped me move.
That's a great friend.
If we're in the Seinfeldian metric in which things are measured, then that means we're practically
fucking palmed my dresser like it was a pizza box.
I'm a big guy.
But the key is you're doing it. You're putting them out there. You're having fun with it.
Yeah,
and it's quality. I mean, that was the first thing when I reached out. I listened to it. I mean, it's good sound. The energy's there. Maybe not you, Tom, but you got to have the...
Jesus Christ.
You got to balance it. Yeah. And I'm low energy. I was telling Jeremy earlier, I'm kind of laid back in mine. It's not... I mean, here I'm a little more outgoing. Well, and so it's a different vibe, so it's cool.
What's fun for us...
And I'm a kind of a big nerd.
Yeah, so and what's fun for me with our podcast, and this is just, you know, again, people could argue with me and say, well, you're way off, but like Tom and I were talking too. Tom and I definitely, even with my wife in the room, I think, even though my wife and Tom have an alliance, I feel like the, in terms of... improvised shtick. I think I feel like Tom and I have the most improvised shtick back and forth, but our buddy Bender is truly the character of the show.
Yeah.
We make fun of him so bad when he's not here. And when he is here, he does something that unintentionally is funny. Like Tom and I shoot for intentional laughs. Bender never shoots for an intentional laugh, but he gets laughs. So
he's the Kramer.
He's the Kramer of our episode. And so, you know, like you said, we enjoy it. I hope people listen to it and say, you know, they're doing all right. I don't even care if they say, oh, this is funny. I got to tune in every week, but I want them to listen to it and something sticks.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And the funny thing is, I mean, with social media, you think like, hey, if people were listening to it, they would comment this and that. But often I'm out and somebody's like, oh, hey, I listened to that episode with so-and-so, and hey, I really enjoyed it, yada, 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 boy, whatever the situation is. It's like, okay, wow.
100% agree. Like, I don't, I mean, I promote a little bit, but yeah, you get that random.
You want to throw something at
my
wife,
like my wife's aunt will be at like a family function like Easter, like, oh, I listened to your last episode. I didn't even know she listened, and like, it was funny. I was laughing.
Maybe if you
would
have gave me 5 stars and a comment, and June, someone would have came out of this, and I wouldn't be strung out and poor.
All right, always come tell us how much you think of it, but please, by all means, and like you said, growing numbers, literally, and I've been saying that word a lot in the last few episodes. I got to cut it back, but the best way to grow your podcast is for people to actually rate it and leave a comment.
Yeah.
That's how the algorithms work.
Totally. Yeah. It's just like that little comment, even if you say you guys suck, that algorithm's going to pick up on
tell
it.
Tell me how shitty I am. I'm fine with it.
Yeah, please, you know, get that heat.
I beg to disagree. I respectfully disagree, but
I can get cheap pee like it's nobody's business.
He can do it. He's the king of all too soon jokes. So, hey, let's bring this
Barbara
train
Bush.
Into the station.
Right. See you later.
Oh, dude, see what you did? No, you didn't. That 8 wasn't points. A joke, though. That wasn't a joke, though. You just said, see you later.
No, she did.
Yeah, she gone.
I heard it's a myth. Facebook myth. Or social media myth.
Well, my wife was really upset when Lester Holt broke into Wheel of Fortune tonight. So
yeah,
you're going to see the final
episode. Oh, shit. Yeah, it's official. It was about, it was only about like an hour before you got here.
Okay.
Officially. So... Let's Tom asked earlier, but let's go back and say, where can everyone find Mr. Ken Calcaterra if they were looking for you?
KenCalcaterra.com is the hub, and then social media, just Ken Calcaterra. Ken Calcaterra, visual storyteller on Facebook, as well as Conversations with Calcaterra, which is on the different podcast networks and all that. Listen to these guys first and listen to me second.
Listen to all of us. You can always find us in my basement, so that's awesome. Pretty easy to do. Anything, any parting shots before we go, Tom?
Well, we never got that for
band. Let's do it. Let's do
you
it.
You
want
to do it or
we
want
go.
To save it for another time?
Yeah, maybe we can.
Well, look at this guy teasing a second appearance.
You know what? We are saving it.
I'm having fun.
Now
so
you've
I
got
need
time
to
think about it.
I know. That's...
So let's do that. Let's save music for a later date.
Yeah,
because
it's a whole... I mean, it's like baseball next time, too, or whatever.
I'm down with it.
Yeah, it's good, man.
Really
this is fun. Thank
episode.
You, guys.
Nothing about the Red. Nothing that'll fix a slumping team like the Reds, so go Cardinals. but so that's bad. Not how we end the episode. We don't say go Cardinals. What we do say, Tom, is...
Let's go, Blues.
All right. On that note, we're going to play the music. Thank you so much, Ken, for coming on.
Thank you, guys.
And, I got a feeling we're going to talk again in the future.
Awesome.
That was fun. This is always the oh shit moment.